another home run in your life.
Fly ball deep left center. Grissom.
Ball game over. World Series.
Many of the subjects on this podcast are baseball players who died at a young age. But today's topic is a bit different. We will be discussing the tragic death of baseball fans on a warm summer day in 1903, a day known as Black Saturday. I'm Nina Instead, and this is Deadball. Baseball emerged from its ancestral roots in the 1840s, becoming wildly popular in New York City and other Northeast points on a recreational level through the start of the Civil War. Amateurs and pickup teams flooded parks and other flat expanses to perform in front of handfuls of friends, family, and curious onlookers. Much as you might see at a Little League game today, minus the dugouts, the fencing, and the bleachers. Ultimately, the mania led to the smell of money permeating the sport, which led to professional teams, which led to professional leagues, which led to facilities to house those teams. The first true ballpark, Brooklyn's Union Street Grounds, was established in 1862 when the owner of a large outdoor skating rink wanted to find additional revenue streams once the ice melted. So he configured the rink to a baseball field, enclosed it with a fence, and added benches for spectators who initially didn't have to pay to enter. Outside of an immovable pagoda, which skaters would encircle in the winter, sitting in short center field, the players found the place just fine. The instability of the early major leagues was matched by the fledgling quality of their ballparks. Most structures were crude and often consisted of a single straight grandstand compared to the more familiar V shape that hugged the baselines. The playing fields themselves were often an adventure. Outfielders, some playing without walls behind them, had to contend with slopes, trees, swamps, lakes, and dangerous debris left over from the garbage dumps that some ballparks were built on. The original Polo Grounds in New York featured two fields, each backing up against one another. It wasn't uncommon for an outfielder's concentration to be disrupted by an invading ball, and the player in pursuit of it, from the game behind him. When the city decided to build a road through the park in 1889, it left the New York Giants, suddenly without a home, to briefly play at a roughened facility out on Staten Island, a facility that included an off-Broadway stage in right field. The actors hung out on the stage during the games, not so much to watch, but to protect the props from an incoming drive. Essentially, every ballpark through the late 1900s was built almost entirely of lumber. And once paired with the intense heat in the form of a lit match, overheated machinery, or even lightning, flames were sure to ensue. Fires were a common occurrence, and it was most frightening when a game was taking place. The scariest such moment came in 1894, when, in one of four fires to burn up a major league ballpark that season, players in Chicago rescued fans. The fans were trapped within the burning West Side grounds, and players used their bats to pry open fencing separating the stands from the field. While mass casualties never resulted from all the fires, it was ironically Philadelphia's Baker Bowl, the first ballpark to eschew wood and be built mostly of steel and brick, that would cause the major's most tragic accident in 1903. National League Park, commonly referred to as the Baker Bowl after 1923, was a baseball stadium and home to the Philadelphia Phillies from 1887 until 1938. This was also the first home field of the Philadelphia Eagles from 1933 to 1935. Built at a cost of $101,000 and with a seating capacity of 12,500, Philadelphia Baseball Park was considered the finest ballpark in the nation when it opened in 1887. Brick was used throughout the structure in place of commonly used wood, and it was the first such facility to offer pavilion seating for customers. The Phillies drew great crowds to the Baker Bowl. It was a good thing because the Phillies were in competition with the American League's Philadelphia Athletics, who, at the time, were a superior ball club to the cellar-dwelling Phillies. But Phillies fans enjoyed the luxury at the Baker Bowl, and they would pack the ballpark to see the Phillies play. On Saturday, August 8, 1903, A large crowd was on hand to watch the Phillies play a doubleheader against their national rival, the Boston Bean Eaters, a team that would later be renamed the Braves. Some 10,000 baseball fans filled the Baker Bowl to watch the contest. Boston took the first game, beating the Phillies in 12 innings by a score of 5-4. In the second game, teams were locked at a 5-5 tie in the fourth inning. At 5:40 p.m., Boston Joe Stanley was at the plate with two outs. However, the attention of fans that had each paid 25 cents for seats in the bleachers down the left field line, their attention was drawn to an incident occurring below on 15th Street outside the ballpark. This incident began innocently enough when a 13-year-old girl ran an errand for her aunt that took her past the Baker Bowl. While running her errand, Maggie Berry bumped into some friends. Fate had them intersect with a pair of drunks while walking in front of the ballpark. It was then that the hubris of adolescence and the consequences of inebriation turned lethal. The group of young girls teased the drunks. One of the drunks grabbed Maggie by the hair, stumbled, and fell on top of her. The teens screamed for help, including yelling, "Murder! Murder!" It was 5:40 p.m., and the second game of the doubleheader was knotted at 4-4 when Boston's Joe Stanley came to the plate. The game halted because of the commotion. Fans heard the cries for help and rushed to see what was going on. To get a good view of what was happening 30 feet below, the mob packed a 7-foot-wide balcony that overlooked 15th Street and Lehigh. The balcony was intended as a pathway to enter and exit the grandstand, and it protruded 7 feet from a wall that was 14 inches thick. It was estimated that 300 people had rushed onto the balcony. Without warning, the balcony broke loose, and over 200 people fell. Sergeant Bartlett of the Philadelphia Police told the Philadelphia Inquirer, "You could not tell if they were dead or alive. Timber, rubbish, and bricks were piled everywhere." Police responded to the calamity. They commandeered streetcars, delivery carriages, and personal vehicles and rushed the victims to the hospital. In the crisis, the best and worst of humanity shined through. Locals opened their homes to victims. Doctors rushed to the scene to give aid, and good Samaritans offered help the best they could. Others were not so helpful and picked the pockets of the dead and wounded. In the ballpark, panic ensued. Sporting Life reported, "The sound of the breaking timbers and the cry of those caught in the fall gave rise to the belief that the whole stand was about to fall. With a wild cry of fear, the crowd rose and made a rush to the field. They clambered over the seats and over one another, screaming, swearing, striking, and fighting for precedence. In the mad rush for safety, they tore at one another's clothing and behaved like insane men. Players grabbed bats as weapons to keep from getting stampeded by the crowd rushing the field. The game was canceled, never to be made up. The casualty report was 12 dead and 232 injured." Dead was the Phillies mascot, Sammy Kelly, who had the misfortune of standing on the street below when the balcony fell. The youngest fatality was William J. Graham, age 24, who lived with his parents. His 18-year-old sister had died of illness in May, and the double blow left the family racked with grief. Among the dead was Edward Williamson, a Civil War veteran who, until this moment, seemed indestructible. He had survived wounds at the Battle of Antietam in 1862, which was the bloodiest day in American history, with 22,717 casualties. He had also made it through incarceration at the notorious Confederate prison camp, Andersonville, where 13,000 people died from scurvy, diarrhea, dysentery, and neglect. A grocery store on 15th Street gathered up over 100 hats from the scene and lined them up in their windows so the owners could come claim them. This became a makeshift memorial, as the hat owners were among the deceased, and the injured were in no condition to pick up their hats. Several versions of the drunken men story had developed, and the police wanted to speak with them to discern what actually happened. The drunks were seen sleeping it off in an alley near 15th Street. By the time police looked for them, they had sobered up and ambled off, with their identities and their version of events lost to history. If Philadelphians thought that the Philadelphia baseball park was cursed, you couldn't blame them. This was the second Philadelphia baseball park, the first, built on the same site, burned to the ground while the Phillies were to take on the Baltimore Orioles almost 9 years to the day of Black Saturday on August 6, 1894. Not to be beaten, when the first ballpark burned, $225,000 went invested in what was hoped to be a fireproof facility. It was also the first stadium in the world to use the latest architectural method of cantilever construction. Thanks to the cantilevered concrete supports and iron girders, it eliminated the need for support columns that had made for obstructed viewing. For its time, the National League Park was a sophisticated building. That it failed so spectacularly only a few years later must have been a jolt to the baseball community. But disasters often prove to be a clarion call for change. This was certainly the case with Black Saturday. In the aftermath of the disaster in 1909, two new stadiums opened, Forbes Field in Pittsburgh and the Phillies' crosstown rivals in Philadelphia, the Athletics, opened Scheib Park. Gone were the wooden ballparks of yesterday. The new era of baseball stadiums was now constructed out of steel and concrete. The new ballparks were not only safer, they also came with bells and whistles previously unheard of. Forbes Field was the first ballpark to have elevators and ramps going to the upper deck. It was also among the first to have luxury seating. Scheib Park took stadium aesthetics to new heights. Fans entered through a facade of brick and arches. The team offices were housed in the spectacular octagonal Beaux Arts Tower, whose design was reminiscent of the architecture of the French Renaissance. Scheib Park's program in 1909 indirectly referenced Black Saturday, touting their new ballpark's construction, almost as if they were poking fun at their crosstown rivals about the number of safety features in the new park. The 13-year-old girl at the center of Black Saturday, Maggie Berry, later became a mother of four before dying at the age of 82 in 1973. Baseball and the world changed dramatically in her lifetime. The year she died, Mike Schmidt had just finished his rookie season. And in 1971, the Phillies moved into the 56,000-seat Veterans Stadium. After the tragedy of Black Saturday, there were lawsuits. Victims claimed the accident was due to faulty construction, while the Phillies maintained that the accident was unforeseeable and resulted due to, quote, irresistible rush of an excited crowd, leading to five times as many people on the balcony than it was designed to hold. Lawsuits would continue for years, with many settled out of court for small sums. The Phillies' 1903 season changed abruptly because of the accident. Phillies owners attempted to restart games at the ballpark on August 10th, saying that the left field bleachers would be roped off and only the grandstand and right field bleachers would be used to seat fans. City officials said no way, not until the entire ballpark could be thoroughly inspected. Potter canceled all future games until an inspection could be done and repairs made. The Phillies would not return to the Baker Bowl until the following season. For the remainder of the 1903 season, the Phillies played their home games at the Athletics Columbia Park, where they would post a 6-9-1 record to complete the 1903 season. Although regarded by baseball historians as the first modern ballpark, the Baker Bowl was more of a transitional structure when it opened in 1895. It symbolized a far-reaching step away from baseball's wooden structures, but remained short of the modern ballparks that would emerge in the early 20th century. Concerns over fire, in part, pushed baseball's owners away from entirely wooden structures. But it was collapse, not conflagration, that provided the final proof of wood's unsuitability for ballpark construction. From the debris and death on 15th Street emerged Scheib Park, Forbes Field, and other steel and concrete palaces. Progress is often the offspring of disaster, but calamity's true measure is gauged in human terms. This sad and all too obvious point is highlighted in the fate of Joseph Edgar, one of the fatalities at National League Park on that hot August day in 1903. As described in a newspaper account from the Philadelphia Inquirer, August 10, 1903, quote, "Edgar had been in poor health and went to the game at the advice of his physician, who had advised open-air recreation as a remedy for his ailment. In starting for the baseball park, he invited his son, Robert, age 15 years, to accompany him. But the boy had an engagement and did not go. The death of Joseph Edgar leaves a widow and five children destitute." After the disaster, many Phillies fans believed that the Baker Bowl was jinxed. A look at baseball records seems to indicate they might be onto something. During the 51.5 seasons the Phillies played at the Baker Bowl, they managed only one pennant, and that was in 1915. The Baker Bowl would remain the home of the Philadelphia Phillies in the late 1930s. The team played its last home game at the park on June 30, 1938, when the Phillies lost to the New York Giants by a score of 14-1. Only 1,500 spectators were on hand to see the last Major League game ever played at Baker Bowl. After the Phillies moved to Scheib Park, its new owners renamed the lot the Philadelphia Gardens and experimented with various types of events. For 1939, the roof and upper deck were peeled off and a midget car racetrack was built around the inside perimeter. In the summer of 1940, an ice rink of regulation hockey dimensions was installed, its underground machinery maintaining a frozen surface and enabling ice skating year-round. The old center field clubhouse was remodeled into a piano bar and entertainment venue called Dick McLean's Alpine Music Bar, which opened May 15, 1942, with the Harlem Highlanders. It would remain open until sometime in the summer of 1943. Local newspapers advertised dancing and skating at the old ballpark site. The Temple University hockey team played some of their games at this site also. There were also occasional boxing matches staged there. These enterprises all faded away during World War II. Today, there is a historical marker at North Broad Street and Huntington Avenue in Philadelphia. This marks the spot where the Baker Bowl once stood. There is no mention of the terrible disaster that occurred there in 1903. A day remembered in baseball circles as Black Saturday. The Dead Ball Podcast was written and created by Tim Scott. Audio production by Thad Scott. For more information on the podcast or to connect with like-minded baseball fans, check out the Dead Ball Discussion Group on Facebook.
Never hit a bigger home run in your life.
Fly ball deep left center. Grissom on.